We're live.
Good evening, everyone. I'd like to call the study session of the University City City Council to order on August 12, 2024 at 5:30 p.m. Before I turn the program over to Mr. Rose, I feel very ecclesiastical here as I'm getting this little echo here. Are there any changes to the regular agenda? Hearing none, Mr. Rose, can we move forward with the Architectural Review Board?
Honorable Mayor, Council members, if we could try to address the echo that we're receiving, or is that what you're... Okay, I think we can still move forward with it. Tonight, we're asking that you receive a presentation on the Architectural Review Board. You may have recalled that this was an item that was requested by the council. And I have Planning and Development Director John Wagner, Dr. Wagner, that will be presenting this item. Dr. Wagner.
Thank you, Mr. Rose. Good evening, Mayor, City Council members. Okay. So tonight we're going to talk about from the interest we got, getting interest from So the background is there's been interest from the city council for several months now in creating an architectural review board, an ARB. So tonight we're going to look at what that would look like, how it's structured, and where it fits in the overall process of what we're doing right now. So I'm going to talk about the scope and review of an ARB, present examples of nearby communities, ARBs, which was very helpful, and then lastly discuss creation and implementation of an ARB in University City. Before I move on, though, I wanted to also thank Noah Chapin, our new planner. Many of you may not have met Noah just yet, and our senior planner, Mary Kennedy. They're going to be adding a few words up here real quick, and I wanted to thank them for all their help on this, as they are the brains of the outfit, so to speak. So what exactly is an ARB? Pretty straightforward definition: to review submitted plans and ensure that all construction and or renovation activities in the city are high quality, conform with adopted architectural standards, and we'll talk about those later, and are cohesive with the general style and design of the surrounding structures. Pretty straightforward. A real important part of the ARB how is the board structured? How is it going to be put together? What's it going to be comprised of? Who would it be comprised of, rather, I guess? So one option would be to have it be the same members and meeting schedule as the Plan Commission, or perhaps the Historic Preservation Commission. It would be a separate agenda item within each meeting. Would require amending the Plan Commission bylaws, of course, and commissioner qualifications. In other words, would one of them need to be a licensed architect, for example? And Clayton actually has things like that. It could be a subcommittee of the Plan Commission or the Historic Preservation Commission, maybe comprised of maybe three or four members. The meeting, though, more importantly, would be separate from the Plan Commission meetings. As an example, last week we had a subcommittee meeting of the code review subcommittee that met here at City Hall. So it would be a different meeting, and it would make a recommendation to the full Plan Commission. A third option would be to create an entirely new standalone board. I know there's some folks have talked about there's a lot of boards and commissions in U City, and this would be another one. Maybe 5 to 7 members would happen before the Plan Commission votes on any conditional use permit or plan developments. For permitted uses, it would happen before the building permit is issued. So if it's not required to go to an actual meeting, if it's just a permitted use and it's a new building, it would have to go before the building permit was issued. And that is the case in Kirkwood, Ladue, Brentwood, as well as Webster Groves. A little bit more on the board structure. Like I said, it would be generally between between 5 and 7 members, perhaps. Any less than that, it's probably a little dicey. Any more than that, maybe gets to be a bit cumbersome. Some members certainly should be licensed architects or another related professions. Some municipalities require members to be residents, while some may allow business owners in the municipality to be part of the board. So if they own a business in the city or active in the community, perhaps they could be on the board as well, even though they don't live in the city. Maybe give some thought to whether or not we should defer applications to the HPC, Historic Preservation Commission, and or private subdivision boards if within their areas before the ARB actually will take a look at something. Frontenac, for example, won't allow an ARB to review it until the private subdivision has approved it. I know we generally steer pretty clear of private subdivisions, so that's a tough one to think about. So to talk about procedure, I'm going to turn it over to Noah Chapin.
Hello, everyone. I'm Noah Chapin. I'm the new city planner. I started here at the end of April, and thank you very much for having us. So, procedure, we assume that the ARB would meet monthly or on an as-needed basis, similar to the other commissions that we've discussed already. They would identify certain low-impact applications that don't really require a full review for some sort of administrative review, things like maybe the way we currently do fences would fall into that category, and allow preliminary review with staff or some sort of working session with the commission so as to reduce resubmittals and working costs for the applicants. And we would, again, just similar to the low impact applications, the administrative applications, we would want to identify which specific types of applications those are, which exact construction or renovation projects are applicable for that. As far as the timing, where does this ARB review fall into the overall development process in U City? We've discussed several options. We would like to propose that the ARB steps in at different points based on which type of case we're reviewing. So for example, a permitted use in its zoning district would likely just come before a building permit application, pretty standard. A conditional use, maybe that would be simultaneous with the public hearing at Plan Commission so that the Plan Commission has a chance to weigh in. And for a plan development, that would be simultaneous with presentation of preliminary development plans. We would want to put some sort of limitation on the review period as to not be overly burdensome to the applicants. And we would want to set some sort of limit then on when they have to act on those approved plans as well, just to keep everything sort of contained. For the scope, these bullets identify a couple questions we would have to answer before the board actually is complete. We would have to identify, for example, which land use categories require an ARB review. Is it just for single family homes? Does it include multifamily, commercial, even industrial? If, you know, that's a conversation that would have to happen. Which applications can be administratively approved? I touched on that earlier. So just for example, do fences, signs, and windows all warrant a full ARB review? I think it depends. Perhaps is it a replacement or a new design? Things like that would have to be discussed. Are the criteria written in the code, or are they merely sort of adopted guidelines that someone can find either on the website or somewhere else, or do they actually live in the code? And if they are in the code, are they illustrated? And these are all sort of on the ground type decisions we would have to figure out as far as conveying that information to the public. And then what actually are the application requirements, which specific like, for example, do we require finalized drawings, or which exact forms would need to be submitted for the application? So here we have an example. This is the list from Ledoux of which case types go to a full ARB review. This is a non-exhaustive list, so it's not the only things that the ARB will review, but I'll give you a moment to peruse that. It's, as you can see, mostly visible, more impactful things that you could do to your property, like a new home, a new porch, or things that would be primarily visible from the public right of way. And then this is Ledoux's list of things that don't necessarily require an ARB review. Things like fences, certain replacements, certain things that wouldn't be as visible or as impactful to the character of that site. And then here we have a list from Clayton. This is their case types that they've identified as being appropriate for an administrative review that would require not a full meeting, just a simple staff review, and then a sign off from whoever we designate as being that authority. So things like the 750 square foot small addition would be likely, you know, likely not warrant a full ARB board review. And now going forward to the relationship with the infill review board, I'll hand it off to Mary. Thank you.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you all for having us again to talk about the ARB potential. So we currently have an infill review board, as you all know. The infill review board hasn't been active for a number of years. I don't believe we have any current members on the infill review board. The way it works set up in the code is that anytime a new single family home is proposed, building permit is submitted, then the zoning administrator would send out notices to the surrounding property owners within 300 feet. And if they choose to petition for IRB review, then it goes to the IRB for review. So the main difference between an IRB and an IRB, as far as we can tell, is something that's kind of unique to uCity. We didn't see examples of it elsewhere, but it really is intended to ensure conformity. So consistent character for the new home compared to the surrounding homes. So there aren't specific guidelines for which to review new homes. It's just kind of review them and make sure they fit in with the character in their neighborhood. An ARB, on the other hand, would have specific guidelines, design guidelines and principles that we would review applications against. So those would get pretty specific. And on the next few slides, I'll go through some examples of what that looks like from other communities. I think that covers most of what I wanted to talk about with the IRB. In terms of moving forward and amending the code, we could replace the IRB entirely with new architectural review board language, or we could kind of incorporate some of the requirements of the IRB into an ARB. Okay, so I can't really read that from here. An ARB could be the entity responsible for enforcing the Olive Boulevard design guidelines and other standards if applicable. Right now, of course, it's incorporated into the zoning review and plan commission process, but having an ARB have extra eyes on that document is something that could be an opportunity. We could also create additional area-specific architectural guidelines. For instance, the Delmar Loop could have its own architectural standards. Residential neighborhoods where there aren't really any commercial uses, those could have their own architectural standards. And then there's kind of the difference between design guidelines and form-based standards. So guidelines are, we'll go through some more examples because it's kind of abstract just talking about it, but kind of principles that guide the ARB and how they review, kind of criteria to review against, and those can include illustrations, whereas form-based standards are very much like quantitative standards, you know, only 30% of the width of a home can be taken up by a garage, for instance, like that type of thing. It gets very specific and prescriptive. So there's really a range in how we could approach this. Do we want to be more broad and allow a lot more flexibility, or do we want to be very specific and prescriptive of what the architectural standards are? Okay. So this first example, these are just excerpts literally copied and pasted from other municipalities' design guidelines. So this is an example from the city of Ladue. They have a document, like a PDF document, separate from their zoning code that illustrates the specific design guidelines that they enforce through their architectural review board. So they talk about the image on the left, the simplicity of massing. And they have an example that says, we prefer this, we don't prefer this. And then the image on the bottom right is a more, these are more specific diagrams calling out specific architectural elements. This is an example from the city of, wait a second. Yes, the city of Kirkwood. So these are illustrations that are actually in their zoning code. You can see they also take the approach of preferred versus discouraged. And these types of guidelines, we would certainly need to hire a consultant or architects to assist in putting together the design guidelines. This isn't something that planning and development staff has skills in, creating these kinds of architectural drawings. So you can see Kirkwood gets pretty specific on the elements within both commercial and residential structures. This next slide is Clayton. So they have kind of text-based standards in their zoning code. So those are also codified. For instance, it says something like facade relief should be incorporated into all building elevations. Long interrupted elevations should be avoided. So those are the types of text-based standards that are more specific than what our IRB does right now that can guide us and help applicants get towards a higher standard of architectural design. But then they also supplement this text in their zoning code with two separate documents. They have one specifically for driveway design and then one specifically for retaining walls. So those seem to be two things that Clayton wants to have a higher quality of design in. And then they rely on the text-based standards for most other things. And then this is the most prescriptive and specific example of how you can enforce architectural standards. This is from Forest Park Southeast, which the kind of informal nickname of this neighborhood in the city of St. Louis is The Grove. They adopted for their neighborhood a form-based code. And so these are actually integrated into their zoning code. They get specific on what types of materials are approved, which types of materials are not approved. They talk about access to the site in terms of design, massing and articulation. Are porches approved? Are awnings and canopies approved? So you can kind of see the text is small, but just to give you kind of a visual of what a form-based code looks like, it says, for this residential district, porches are allowed, awnings and canopies are not allowed. Just to kind of give you some examples to think about. And then I will hand it back to John.
Thank you, Mary and Noah. So where does that leave us? With the three options that we had talked about earlier, we think maybe option one or even option two would be the best option, creating a new board entirely Might be a bit cumbersome, I think. So we would recommend maybe the same members or a subcommittee of the Plan Commission, perhaps the Historic Preservation Commission. We think the Plan Commission would be the best place for that. Next steps would be to determine that desired board structure, member qualifications, the meeting procedures and scope, et cetera. Then budget for a consultant to create and illustrate guidelines. And that may or may not necessarily be part of the overall zoning code revision that we have coming up. Create a plan for public involvement in creation of those specific guidelines, and then amend the code accordingly. Lastly, the last page in your presentation is a handy little appendix that NOAA put together about what, and they have links within there so you can do do research on the city's the individual city's websites, Frontenac, Ladue, Webster Groves, a little bit on Chesterfield, Clayton, Kirkwood, and Brentwood. With that, we'd be more than happy to address any comments.
Thank you, Dr. Wagner. Are there questions from members of council? Mr. Clay.
Thank you, Mayor Crow, and thank you, Dr. Wagner, and to your team for the presentation. First question is about the qualifications associated with board members. I know in the case of other boards and commissions where we have had specific criteria, often licensure or some sort of mm-hmm. professional criteria, it has frustrated the process of actually populating that board. I believe there have been circumstances where boards just couldn't meet because they didn't have folks who met certain criteria. So can you talk a little bit about any thought given to that conundrum that we have faced in the past?
I think we would need to, and I haven't had a lot of experience with that around here. I know there's historic preservation has certain qualifications, and as does the Plan Commission, so on and so on. I think we would need to strike a balance because I wouldn't want to have all architects on there and then not have enough architects, and then you know wait 2 years for the before the board even can get together. So maybe just an interest in maybe that's where the application process to you folks would come in. I think we would need to strike a balance. Certainly we can't make it too restrictive, like half of them have to be licensed architects, the other half something else perhaps, I don't know, maybe an engineer, civil engineer perhaps. I think we would need to strike a balance to make sure that we don't run into that problem.
And my second question is regarding the prescriptive nature of the standards themselves. The communities that the team did research on, in some ways are in a different position than us. Ladue,
sure.
I mean, you know, they could tell you it has to be made out of gold and somebody would figure out a way to do it. And so what I don't want to do is, as we are standing up certain areas and they are becoming more attractive because of the things this body has done and the city staff has done to bring development, I don't want to frustrate people who might be interested in building or adding or doing something to their home and make it so prescriptive that they just throw their hands up in the air and don't want to bother. But at the same time, clearly we don't want just anything. So which of the municipalities that you surveyed, which do you think has the kind of the best balance between, or if there are a couple that you thought were
from what I looked at, and I'm not sure, I thought Webster Groves struck a pretty good balance. Do you have any thoughts? Clayton and Brentwood, perhaps. Okay. I think that's important too, is striking a balance. You don't want to make it, you want to make it generalizable to use an academic term, make it generalizable to U City and make the standards fit U City, and not use too much of what Brentwood has and apply it to University City. You want to make it U City specific and adapt it to U City. And also, and we've all talked about this, make sure it doesn't hinder or lengthen the development process to the point where no one's going to say, I don't want to do it anymore. So that was probably our biggest concern is making sure it doesn't add too much to the timeline and too much to the process to the point where people would lose interest in not do anything.
Thank you.
Mr. Hales.
Thank you. Thank you for all of the effort that went into this. I thought this was a great amount of information. And this is something that I recall being talked about going back well over 10 years. I did have kind of a different take than the suggestion. I think that probably the best solution would be to replace IRB with ARB. Should we go that route?
We have thought about that, yeah.
Because I think with historic preservation, that's a great commission. And they've got some really good members, but it really has a more historical focus. And, you know, this is, in my mind, if we were to come up with the code for an ARB and the standards, it wouldn't preclude somebody from maybe building something modern. And so I just think that's kind of in conflict. And then the Plan Commission, who, as you know, I think are spectacular, all of them. I think we've sat through those meetings, and I think they've got their hands full generally with enough content and subject matter coming their way.
We thought about that too.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I was in Chesterfield many years ago, we did have a specific architecture review board, and their recommendation fed into the Plan Commission for their site plan. Of course, doesn't exactly work here, but it could. But it could be a recommendation like that where it feeds into whatever, whether the site plan would be approved by the council here before it doesn't. If it were a conditional use permit, for example, it could feed into the Plan Commission recommendation and then to the City Council recommendation.
Mr. McMahon.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you for the presentation. I'm so glad that we didn't follow my lead with one of the first work study sessions where I brought forth discussions about the architectural review board that pale and compare that have you guys just much better job than what I did. So let me just start off there. But that was,
I have these two to thank for that.
Yeah. So great job. It helps give us some guide rails, things to think about moving forward. In setting up the body that would look at this issue, to me, it seems like we almost need to kind of define the things that we want them to look at, because that will help generate the anticipated number of cases they might see in a year, which then helps to understand, would it fit within planning or historic, or should it be a standalone? Because that it's the business that's going to be generated that would impact how overwhelmed or underwhelmed the differing bodies would be. It also might be beneficial to think about it in ways, because when I talked to residents about this, it was always more infill, this new home, the bigger construction as opposed to the retaining wall. Although that could still be an issue. Do we start out with a certain scope and add to it as we go? Or do we just want to do the full, what is entailed in this? That's just another thought that I had. And I think that maybe we could reach out to historic preservation members, even if we can find past and present, and Planning Commission as well, since we did allow members of commissions to serve on more than one now. We could just ask for volunteers to populate maybe the first go round. So we'd have some folks that have experience with meetings, experience with planning, experience with structures. And so we might be able to populate the first go round with some folks like that in a way that makes sense, kind of a hybrid of the three that you were talking about there. But those are just the kind of thoughts I had going over this as we looked at it.
If I could make a few myself, first off, to Noah, welcome. We're glad to have you here. You and Mary and John as well did a great job on this presentation. Very organized, very easy to read and understand. This is clearly one of those proposals where the devil's going to be in the details on this one without any question. I do think that it would be good to spend some time due to the number of private subdivisions we do have as to what are the pros and cons of having them go first. I mean, I think we can all go through the stories that different trustees have gone through in the neighborhoods on what is approved and what's not. So I think that's definitely one of those challenges. And I want to saddle up next to Councilmember Clay on his comments, and that I think compared to some of the other communities that were that have this type of a board, we definitely have a lot more economic diversity and housing stock diversity. And so I think the one of the things that intrigued me, I'll put these two things together, is it intrigued me that Forest Park Southeast is not a private neighborhood, I don't believe. I believe it's simply a district within the city. And so if they're doing something different in Forest Park Southeast than clearly the rest of St. Louis is doing, how did that come about where you've got, now that may be because it's a WashU overlay of some sort, because I know WashU had an awful lot to do with Forest Park Southeast, to say the least. But my point is, this doesn't necessarily, I don't know that this has to go, everything has to go across the board if in fact you've got the opportunity to base this on a variety of factors. I think for us as a city, it would be much better to be, you know, one set of rules for everybody. But I think we do have to recognize the housing stock diversity that we've got in University City. For Olive, I do think this is one of the things I really had not thought about when I read this proposal, that this would give us a great deal, I think, more say on what happens on Olive as we redevelop that. I think that is, I really hadn't thought about that too much in commercial terms. Finally, I think that Mary mentioned something about the consultants. I'm assuming that it wouldn't be too difficult to reach out to the communities and see who they use, because they had to, knowing Clayton and Ledoux doesn't really have a large city staff, so they hired somebody. Clayton hired somebody. I'm pretty sure Frontenac did too. So hopefully we would be not plowing a new field, but have some folks who had done that before us. And as you were speaking on architects, I just wanted to have this stream of thought. I'm wondering whether or not, because we have struggled on architects and engineers, particularly architects, on so many boards, I'm wondering whether or not we could view it in a little different light, as we do having an attorney for the pension board, an attorney for city council. I'm wondering whether or not, instead of making it be a volunteer position, could we not retain an architect to be a part of the board and get paid as a consultant, just like we do the attorneys for the pension board and we do Mr. Mulligan, because at some point in time, I think we have to recognize that we're never going to have the problem of having too many architects on this board. That will never be the problem, I don't think. It would be, can you find one? And so anyway, that'd be the one on the architect. And then finally to dear Peggy Holly and the members of the planning commission, your plate is already full. And all of our commissions work hard, but I don't know of any commission that's put in more time since I've been mayor than your commission. I can't think of a single one. And so anyway, anything we do, I would ask that we go through the planning commission members and see what they think, see what their thoughts are, because they really have done heavy lifting for several years, and I would not want to put too much on them. So that was a little stream of consciousness on my part, but I wanted to get some of those things out so that we could sort of work through those. Mr. Fuller.
Thanks. Great presentation. Is there a way that we could consider incorporating the private subdivision entity? This has been kind of a elephant in the room when it comes to certain things. Does the resident have to go before the private subdivision first and then come here? Maybe include the private subdivisions in this board some way, as advisors or some sort of thing. Just a thought.
Anything else?
I did just want to piggyback real quick on that. I think as this progresses, reaching out to some of the, and it's not just private subdivisions or public subdivisions that have indentures and standards, but reaching out to some of those trustees and agents they deal with this every day, and they are some of the folks who have absolutely wanted this as just a bit of extra insurance to make sure that the character of these 100-plus-year-old neighborhoods can be maintained into the future.
Any other questions of Dr. Wagner?
Mayor, I just had one question of the council. It would be our intention to advance this project by moving it forward and having a very limited scope of this separate board initially. And then you can always add to the ordinance as problems arise that need to be addressed. Is that acceptable?
I think so.
Okay.
Thank you. With that being said, I think the appreciate everybody coming. So I think we can move. If do I have to move into an open session, or can I go into close from a study session? Larry, do you know?
You can have a motion to go in close from here.
I think we have enough time to probably get some of our executive session work done ahead of time. I would welcome a motion to go to close session according to Missouri Revised Statute 610.021, legal actions, causes of action, litigation involving public governmental body, and any confidential privileged communications between that governmental body or its representatives or attorneys and individually identifiable personnel records, performance ratings, or records pertaining to employees. Is there such a motion? Motion made by Mr. Hales. Is there a second? Seconded by Mr. McMahon. Is there a discussion? Hearing none. Madam Clerk, would you please call the roll?
Councilmember Thiemann.
Aye.
Councilmember Smotherson. Councilmember McMahon.
Aye.
Councilmember Hales.
Aye.
Councilmember Clay.
Aye.
Councilmember Fuller.
Aye.
Mayor Crow.
Aye. Thank you very much. We will move into closed session on the second floor and be back up hopefully right around 6:30.